Sweet.
Do you know Deaconess Kim Bilkin, who was deaconess here for how many years?
Eight.
8 years?
Yeah.
Very good. And that was
enough.
Okay. So, 2002 to 2010?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah.
Good. So I only got to work with her for a few months, and then she took the call up to Wisconsin. So don't know what that says about me, but what has mysterious ways. But she's done great work and continues to do so, so we'll let her talk now about her mission work in Germany.
All right, thanks. Yeah. So, so I'm a missionary now with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You can see on the map, we have five different regions of the world where we have missionaries serving: North America, South America, Africa, Asia, and then the giant blue region at the top is Eurasia. So all of Europe and parts of Asia, and that's where I get to serve, specifically in the country of Germany, in the state of Saxony. So those of you who know your LCMS history might know that that's where the original Lutherans came from that started the Missouri Synod. And I live in the city of Leipzig, and I work also in a city about 60 miles away called Chemnitz. So Pastor pretty much ran through almost my whole background, but so I'll kind of blast through a little bit of my history. For those of you who may not know me, I grew up not too far from here at Camp Silka. My dad was the camp director there until I was 12 years old. And so that was a very formative time for me, shaped my faith a lot being in that camp environment and having the counselors as role models. So really kind of led me into my future as a church worker, I think, as well as getting involved in junior high and high school with Ongoing Ambassadors for Christ, which is really the first time that I realized there's people that don't know Jesus in the world. So that was kind of a realization for me in those years, and it made me want to share the gospel with those who didn't know Jesus. When I was a child, my grandfather would teach me little phrases in German. He had been born in Germany, but came over when he was 3 months old, but he still remembered a few things, so I would learn a little bit from him here and there, basic phrases. And when we visited my oldest brother, on the far left there, he was in the military in Germany for several years, and we visited him when I was about 10 years old, and I tried to use, you know, a few of the German phrases that I knew, but then I got freaked out because people responded in German and I didn't know what they were saying. So that was kind of my motivation to start taking German when I started school. And when I was in high school, we visited a church in Germany. We went on a tour to Germany, and I spoke to the pastor because the church was pretty empty that day, and he told me that less than 2% of the country is in church on any given Sunday, which was kind of a shock to me as well. And that was what motivated me to want to go back someday. So when I got to Concordia, Chicago, God led me to enter the deaconess program there. And I was able to serve my deaconess internship in Germany for 2 years. So I spent 2 years with our partner church, the S-E-L-K. Well, that's kind of cool. Selbstständige Evangelisch-Lutherische Kirche, or Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church. And that is the partner church of the LCMS in Germany. So I learned a lot in those years, but God saw fit to call me and place me in my first call in a familiar place that you all probably recognize, yes? So as I mentioned, ooh, nice, thank you, cool. So 21 years and 1 month ago today was my installation and commissioning here. So kind of unbelievable to see us praying for college students that I remember being born. So so very cool, though. But I really was blessed to be here for those 8 years. Then I took the call to Concordia University, Wisconsin. Was able to do campus ministry there for 7 years. And then the Synod contacted me about this role in Germany, and I thought, you know, Germany had always been on my heart and in the back of my mind, like maybe someday I would return, but this was a little different, going to the former East, first of all, and also working with a whole new culture and language that was completely unfamiliar to me, the Persian culture and people. So for those of you who don't know, Persians mostly come from Iran and Afghanistan and speak the Persian language, which they call Farsi in Iran and Dari in Afghanistan. And so we have several people in our congregation from both of those countries. And this was the church building that I showed up to in 2018. The church built this after World War II. They lost their building during the war. They said, we're going to build a temporary, kind of simple structure until we can build something better. And here they were in 2018, still in this church. And this is also where the outreach to the Persian community began. And here's the inside of the church. When the pastor who began outreach to Persians retired, they decided they wanted to call a pastor to speak and work with the German congregation, but also a missionary to work with the Persians. So Pastor Hugo Gavers came, and he met a guy in his cycling club and told him, yeah, I'm a pastor at this church on such and such street. And the guy was like, I live on that street. There's no church there. What are you talking about? He's like, no, there really is. The next time the cycling club met, the guy like, he's like, you're right, there is a church there, but you don't want to go there. It's hidden away in the woods, and there's a big gate, and no one's going to ever find it. So Pastor Hugo said, we need a center to do outreach among the people, more in the center of town where the people are. And so he opened up an outreach center called Die Brücke, which in German means, anybody? Brian? Oh, someone else know? Brücke in German?
Bridge.
The bridge, yes, exactly. So that's our goal, is to be a bridge into the community to help them find faith and salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. So the congregation, when they visited the bridge, the Brücke, you stand at this door, and when you do a 180, there was this empty church building standing there, not being used anymore. So some of you have heard this story already. So they basically were able to acquire this building. The state church had combined some congregations and left this building to deteriorate. So they were more than happy to get it off their hands, sold it to us for the grand sum total of, who remembers?
$1.
Yep, €1, which is roughly a dollar. Yep, exactly. But that's not how much we've had to invest in it since, because this is how it looked when we first got there. It needed a lot of work. It needed floor. It had no floor. All the original paint and design had been painted over. And so specialized artists came in, and a lot of construction workers spent a lot of time reinforcing the tower and the windows and putting in flooring. And artists painted by hand the original design from when the church was built in 1893. And so this is our worship space today. We have a team of 3 missionaries from the LCMS currently working together in the mission there. So you see me down in the lower right-hand corner there. And then we have Mark Winterstein, who is there as a geo missionary, which means he's only going to be there for a total of 18 months. So he has been there just over a year, so he'll be heading back in March. And then Rachel Krause is another missionary who's now gone career, so she's going to be there long-term with me and with Pastor Hugo. And some of you mentioned you visited Germany. We do get a lot of Lutheran tourists coming to town because of the Lutheran sites nearby, and Johann Sebastian Bach spent much of his life in Leipzig. And so you can see these are some of the Lutheran tourists that we have been able to visit with in recent months. So I don't know if you... This is President Harrison, and then this is Pastor Scott Murray, and this guy was our regional director in Eurasia, Pastor James Krikova. He just recently retired from that role, but they were able to come visit us. So that was a special thing. So the 3 of us work with Pastor Hugo. Our work is basically in 3 different parts. And they all kind of overlap a little bit, but primarily the 3 areas of ministry that we have going in Leipzig are the work among the Persian community, work among our neighborhood, reaching out to, there's a very Muslim as well as atheist population surrounding our church, and so doing outreach to them. And then also the 3rd aspect is actually congregational work. That pastor, the German pastor that the congregation called 17 years back, has left our congregation. And so Pastor Hugo has now been named long-term vacancy pastor until his retirement, which is probably not for about 6 or 7 years. So now we're all supporting him in that because it's a little extra than on his plate as well as ours. So I'll share a little bit about the Persian ministry first. Anybody know anything about Iran? Hear anything about Iran in the news in the last year or so, a little bit? Okay. So basically, something happened a year ago that sparked a lot of protest in Iran and throughout the world among the Persian community. There was a young girl, 19 years old, was wearing the hijab but there was maybe like this much hair sticking out of it, and she was arrested because of that, because there should be no hair showing. And she subsequently died in police custody, most likely because of the way she was treated in their custody. So a lot of outrage over that, a lot of protest, people in Iran being arrested for protesting, dying also in prison. And so that means a lot of new people have been coming to Germany in the last year. So this is one of our groups of newcomers taking baptism classes in our outreach center. And you can see Pastor Hugo there with the computer. We're not just teaching the Persians that are coming into our outreach center in Leipzig. We have other Persians throughout Germany who are in other congregations of our church body, but their pastor doesn't speak Persian. So he's helping them connect with us so they can learn about Jesus online through our classes. And also there have been a few people taking our classes online from Iran when they've been able to connect to the internet that way. So one of the women who took our online class is shown here at her baptism at her church in Berlin. And her son was younger. He's not able to take the confirmation class quite yet, but he wanted to be baptized. So they asked me to come and instruct him in baptism in the Persian language, since he does not yet knowing German. So that was a really cool thing to be a part of. And now he's in school, he's starting to learn German, and then pretty soon he'll be able to take the catechism class from his pastor there in German, which will be neat. So, but here's some of the, another one of the recent baptisms in the last year. And a lot of those new young men coming together for their first communion. So in addition to teaching the faith and instructing people and baptizing people, we're also helping them with kind of day-to-day tasks. They come in, they don't know German, they have to navigate the legal system and apply for asylum, and so we are there for them, talking with them, listening to them, helping them. Sometimes I go with people to the doctor or to the lawyer's office and help translate, or help them kind of sort through documents they get in the mail and fill out papers or write letters for them. So a lot of different things. Of course, we also come together for fellowship and support one another and spend time in our outreach center. And whenever one of them does receive asylum, it's a big celebration. So this woman has been in Germany longer than I have, I think around 8 years, and finally this summer got her asylum. So she was overjoyed. She'd been starting to lose hope. She'd been starting to think, you know, what's going to happen to me? How am I going to survive? And then finally, she was granted asylum. So she prepared a big Persian meal for us. And this man and his son, the man has a wife and two younger children, but I accompanied the two of these guys to a lawyer's appointment, and then they wanted to thank me by taking me out for Persian food. They didn't cook it themselves, but they wanted to feed me Persian food. So it's something they enjoy sharing, their culture and their food. And so they often also prepare meals during for congregational gatherings and celebrations, which is neat. Another thing that we help people with is, you know, finding work and then finding apartments and things like that. So this guy wants to become a hairdresser, so he asked if I could be a guinea pig, and he cut my hair, so helping out however we can. And also still teaching music lessons to a lot of the Persians and working specifically with some of them on our musical resources for worship. So we had, I think the last time I was here, I talked a little bit about the liturgy that we had kind of developed, the sung liturgy in Persian. I think I sang a few of the parts of liturgy for you there, and this woman is still writing hymns and bringing them to me and asking, okay, can we put these to music now and use them in worship? Now that my Persian has advanced a little more, I'm doing a lot more translating. So the last year I worked on a project of translating all of the seasonal proper prefaces. We just had kind of the main one for the season of Trinity, so got all the seasonal ones done, although I just realized the end of the church year coming up, there's one more seasonal one I'm going to have to do here in a couple weeks. And then each week I do the church prayers for the service and those sorts of things. Our partner church got a new hymnal recently, so they have new antiphons for their introits. And so I've been converting those into Persian so that we can also sing the same antiphons that they're singing in German, so if you know music, you might think it looks a little bit funny. It's because Persian is read from right to left. So because the antiphons aren't necessarily intuitive melodies, I want to have the notes up there for myself, if nothing else. So I just flip the image of the notes and then put the Persian text over the top of that so we can sing that. I guess I could sing that for you if you want to hear it. It goes, Amine garani haye khodra beu besiparid zira u befekre shomahast. So that's the antiphon, and that was from the Sunday right before I came. So on Saturday we spend our day in Chemnitz, so we get to take the train there. So that's Hugo and Rachel and myself, and Hugo's son actually on the train with us. He lives in a group home, but he's able to go with us on the weekends. He comes see his parents every weekend and usually rides the train with us to Chemnitz. And we do not have a big church there that we're using right now. We just worship out of our outreach center. So instead of ringing bells, Pastor Hugo plays his trumpet to call the neighborhood, let them know, hey, we're here, we're having worship, come on down. But we're just in this kind of small office space for the time being, but receiving the same gifts of God and hearing the word, receiving the sacraments. So whether it's big fancy building like in Leipzig or a simple space like this. So, and then we spend time there helping them after church, and we're able to share meals together. So last year we made a big Thanksgiving meal for the crew there in Leipzig, kind of shared that with them. And we also had a Persian couple in Chemnitz recently get married, so that was a really neat thing. And the bride's mother even came from Iran for the wedding, which was kind of amazing. And she's still Muslim, but she was willing to come in and witness her daughter's Christian marriage, which was a pretty big deal. So, and none of our work in Persian would be nearly as well done without this lady over here. She's our teacher. She comes in every week and spends 3 hours in our outreach center with us. She spends an hour with Pastor and corrects his sermon for the week. And then she spends an hour with me and corrects any hymns or prayers that I've done for that week. And then we also work on just general improving my conversation skills and those kinds of things. And then Rachel is just starting out with Persian. So she's a real blessing to us. She gave me permission to ask for prayers for her. She just had surgery on Friday. She's been having some health concerns. So if you would like to pray for her and also pray for her as she is weekly hearing the Word of God and having theology explained to her so that she can help improve our translations, but she's not yet a Christian. But I feel like there's plenty of opportunities for her to hear God's Word, and we're praying that God will work through that in her heart. So, shifting gears now to the neighborhood outreach. So here you see the front door of our church, and a sight which is not very uncommon. Often we'll find beer bottles broken, laying in front of our church steps. A lot of people like to sit on our church steps and hang out. You may have noticed in front of our church there was a big park, and then the outreach center is on the other corner, and so it's a very popular place to hang out, and the church steps are a nice place to sit. So, and then you see above the door this picture of Jesus, and in German it says, Kommt her zu mir, alle, die ihr mühselig und beladen seid, ich will euch erquicken. And that's a verse from Matthew 11. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And so Jesus is there with outstretched arms saying, come to me. But where's the problem? Who sees the problem in the photo? The gate, exactly. We do not like the gate. We want to remove it. We have to get permission from the city, so we're working on that. But it's kind of like, yes, come to me, but don't come too close. So there's a barrier there, some kind of barrier. And we all have barriers that keep us from Jesus, and we want to not have any visible, physical reminders of those barriers. We want there to be an open path for people to come into the church to receive God's gifts, to hear his word. And so we're trying to keep that gate open as much as possible to welcome people in. These are a number of our German neighbors who are unchurched and who we try to visit with as much as possible and share the love of Christ with. And in addition, we have many people from other countries who are also Muslim, and they are welcome as well. We had recently, right before I came, we had a big festival, a week-long festival where we had the church doors open every single day, had big events every single day. We passed out 2,000 flyers door-to-door in the neighborhood to invite everyone to come, and there were various events throughout the week for all ages, for children, for seniors, for everybody. And so Wednesday night, we had kind of a bigger event with music, and there was a guest pastor from another town that came and shared God's word, and a lot of people came to hear and to eat the food that we also provided, but the Muslims wouldn't come into the church. So we set up benches outside. They were able to sit there and hear everything and receive food from us that we brought out to them, and so we're praying that God works through that too, even though they're not quite at the point where they want to come in. So at the end of the week of the festival, there was actually, so all week during the festival, there was a young girl who wanted to come and participate in everything. She was there every day. She's always in the park. I've known her for years. She, every time I'm out there, she comes and wants to pet the dogs, or she wants to, you know, hang out or whatever. So seen her all the time. But every time we had something inside the church, she would come up to the door and she would stop. And then she would look up at her apartment window and make sure mom wasn't watching. Because she said, my mom won't let me come in the church because we're Muslim. But she wanted us to come. So then if she didn't see mom, she'd come in and she'd participate. And kind of a really profound thing that happened the very last day of the festival, the end of the day, I was getting ready to close up the doors and lock them. And I turned around and saw her inside the church, this young girl. And then there was a woman with her that I didn't know the woman. Turns out it was her mother. So I said to them, oh, I'm so sorry, we're getting ready to lock up, so you're going to have to come out now. And I said, did you need the bathroom or, you know, what, it, you need something? And the woman says, I need help. And so it turned out that her ex-husband, the girl's father, was in their apartment with a knife and was threatening them. And so they had come into the church to hide from him. And so I said, okay, nope. Let's go sit down, I'll call the police, let's call a woman's shelter where you can go for the night until this is all resolved. And so got her taken care of, but afterward when we, because after the big festival, our whole team went out to dinner together and we were talking about that situation and just how, you know, here she was preventing her daughter from coming in to our church all week long, and yet in her hour of need, when she was seeking a place of refuge, she knew she could come in there, that that was a place she would be safe. And so we're praying for her, too, that that'll translate into finding true and eternal safety and refuge in the arms of Christ. So this past year, a year ago was our first festival. It used to always be a one-day thing, Stadtteilfest, neighborhood festival. So it was a good experience. Everyone had a good time. But this year, as I mentioned, we made it Stadtteilwoche. We made it a week-long thing. And graffiti is a very popular activity in our neighborhood, and so we thought, let's kick it off with a graffiti contest. And so we sewed together several banquet tablecloths and hung them up in the park, and we had on one side, we said, here's where you can just spray all of your concerns, all of your heartbreak, your worries, all your burdens. And then on the other side, you can spray paint your joys. So, and then we had pizza, and people were able to do graffiti. And then in the center of it all, one of our members painted that same image of Christ that's above our church door right in the center of the two sides. And so, you know, we use that then as a basis for sharing the gospel that week, that Christ is in the midst of our joys and in the midst of our sorrows, that he's there for us, and he's there for you, and we're here for you. So this was a really cool moment where one of our volunteers was sharing with a couple of Muslim girls that had come in and telling them who Jesus was. And they know about Jesus. I mean, Jesus is mentioned in the Quran. They know he existed, that he was, but they just consider him like a prophet. So when she told them that he died and he rose again, they're like, oh, no, that's not right. That's not what we learned. And she's like, no, it's really true. He really did die and he's alive today. And one of the girls said, well, then we better tell people. So we're like, that's exactly what we're trying to do here. So one of the really cool things about the festival was the opportunity to also reconnect with a lot of people that we hadn't seen in a while. So this is a guy. He was a professional electric guitar player in a rock band in the 60s in Germany. And he used to always be in the park up until about 3 years ago, I would see him pretty much every day, and I would visit with him, and he'd say, oh, bring your guitar out, let's play some songs, and so he would teach me, you know, his classic rock songs from the 60s that I was not terribly familiar with, and then I would teach him, he'd say, well, do you teach me something? So I'm like, okay, well, this is a song we did in church this week, you know, and so he would learn our church songs, and so it was a good exchange, and then like 3 years ago, just never saw him. Didn't know what happened to him, wondered about it, but, you know, didn't know if he passed away, if he was ill. Turns out his health had gone kind of south, and so he wasn't able to get out to the park as easily. But Rachel rang his doorbell with a flyer when we were distributing those, and she came back that afternoon when we were all done passing out flyers, and she said, oh, I met someone that said to tell you hi. So she rings his bell, and he gets the flyer, and he said, wait, does this have something to do with that American girl that plays guitar? So she's like, oh yeah, that's Kim. So one afternoon we had like a coffee hour, and all of a sudden I see him with his cane making his way out to the park, and I was thrilled to see him. And then he had a friend go get his guitar for him from the apartment, and we got to sit together, play guitar again, and visit. And then the thing that really surprised me was that he came back on Sunday morning when we had our outdoor service in the park, and he came to worship, and afterward he said to me, I was pleasantly surprised. He'd never been to anything like that before, and he said a lot of the things that the pastor said rang true, and he had a lot of things to think about. So we made an appointment. When I get back from doing my visits here, I'm going to go visit him and his wife and have coffee, and we'll talk some more about that. So there's another person that you can keep in your prayers. I would tell you all their names. I just don't know if this is being recorded and put on the internet. I don't necessarily want to. Is it being recorded?
It's recorded. Yeah, it can't be edited, though.
Okay. Well, if you want to know their names for praying later, come ask me. I'll tell you their names. Okay. So this is another girl who came to camp with us. We always do a summer camp for the neighborhood kids every year, and we have a weekly kids program. So she and three of her seven siblings were at the age when I first got to Germany that they were coming to our weekly kids group, and they would come to camp with us. Her mom has seven kids from almost as many fathers, and they're atheist, and they're very like profound atheists. Like, the kids would come to our programs and they would be learning the Lord's Prayer and hearing Bible stories and learning songs about Jesus, and then they'd go home and their mom would say, now don't forget that we're atheists and we don't believe any of that. So she came to camp. Some of you may remember, if you have a really good memory, I wrote about her in one of my first newsletters, that she had come to camp and pastor was doing a devotion and said, God likes us, and she interrupted his devotion and said, no, he loves us. And so it was really encouraging to see how she was starting to really understand the gospel. And during our breaks, she would climb up to the top of the playground and be singing songs about Jesus, the resurrected Lord. And she'd say, come up here and sing with me. And so I'd climb up there and sing. And after that camp 5 years ago, we never saw her or her siblings again. So I was super discouraged, you know. Her mom said, you know, we're kind of scared of some of the people in the neighborhood, and we're just going to keep the kids inside and not let them go out in the park and not let them do anything but go to school. I think also she was probably afraid that they were becoming Christians. But anyway, this summer, there's another park, not the one directly in front of our church, but kind of adjacent to our church, a bigger park, and there's a bike path through it, and I often bike through there on my way to church. I started seeing her and her brothers there in that park, so I would put on the brakes and be like, oh, it's you, how are you? And so good to see you, we miss you, and you guys should come back. And she introduced me to two littler brothers that I didn't know yet, that were too little to come to our group. And so, but they got the flyers for the festival, and she and her two little brothers came every single day. They came for the senior coffee hour as well as the kids' day, everything. They were always there participating. So that's her in the front with the pink ball cap. One of her brothers is in the bike taxi with her with the baseball cap behind there. And so one of the afternoons I was teaching the cajon, a drum, and teaching some rhythms. And one of the things I do with the kids at camp is I will start a rhythm, teach it to them. Once they have it down, the simple pattern, we'll start singing one of the camp songs along with it. And so I was doing the drums with this group here, and I saw her walking nearby. And so I just decided, I'm going to start singing the song that I remember her singing on the playground all the time. So I did, and she started singing along as she walked around the park. I was, pretty excited about that. And so then I went up to her and I said, I can't believe you still remember that song from camp 5 years ago. And she's like, oh, yeah. And do you still go to camp? And I said, yeah, we do. Yeah, you should come. Could I bring my little brothers? And I said, of course you can't. So she said, yeah, okay. So she told her little brother, we're going to camp next summer. We just got to ask Mom. So then she came back the next day and she said, I asked Mom and she said we can go. So pray that they do go, that Mom doesn't go back on her word, and pray that they can start coming back to our weekly kids program and that God will continue to work in their hearts as well. So this was our first post-pandemic camp here. We just had 6 German girls, and then this year we had 3 Germans, 3 Ukrainians, and then 11 Persians. So 4 of the kids from Iran in the picture are actually our church members, and 2 of them said, hey, can we bring a friend to camp, even if he's Muslim? I'm like, of course you can, but make sure he knows we're going to be talking about Jesus. Okay, so they brought like 9 friends, and so we had a really cool week together doing art projects, learning about the Bible, petting the dogs. You can't see Elliot, but he's in my kangaroo pouch there, and we sang songs. We did a lot of mixed language singing, which if we have time at the end, I can try to teach you one today. So it was a really, really great experience. And another way that we share the gospel in our community is through music. So this is a choir that I sing in. Let's see, that's me right there. And we did Bach's Christmas Oratorio in our church this year. And so, and our pastor is able to say a few words at the beginning and remind people, this isn't just a really cool Christmas tradition in Germany. There's some meaning behind this, and we celebrate the birth of our Savior in this music. So shifting now to the congregation, here's our congregation having a church picnic this summer. Kind of the cool thing now about our missionaries being responsible for the congregation in addition is being able to really bring the mission and the congregation together more and try to create more opportunities for connection between the Germans and the Persians. So, and we're also teaching some a German confirmation class now as well. And one of the girls that comes to summer camp every year showed up now and is starting to take our confirmation class with these guys. So that's been cool. And then of course we have a Christmas program again now. And Mary was played by one of the newly baptized Persian girls this past year, which she was super proud and did such a good job. So. And we also get to visit homebound members now. Pastor was, worried when we shifted to more congregational work. Well, is the LCMS going to be okay with that because you're supposed to be doing mission work? And I'm like, as far as I'm concerned, this is also mission work. They need the gospel just as much as everyone else. So, he's isolated from the congregation. He's lonely. He's lost his wife. A lot of days I show up and he is so down. He's like, just give me a pill so I can end it now. And it's like, yeah, I know you're suffering, but Christ is with you in the midst of this, and sometimes it helps open his eyes and his heart and his smile when I bring a couple friends along, and then we read God's word together and sing the hymns, which he knows them all, so he just needs reminding. So, and another woman who they told us, don't go visit her, she's got dementia, she's non-responsive, it's not going to really do any good. As soon as we start singing those hymns and praying with her, the Lord's Prayer, she's right there. And we asked her what she wanted for her birthday. She wanted a dog. So we showed up, and I was outside in the courtyard of the nursing home, and the pastor went and said, can we wheel her out so she can see the dogs for her birthday? And they said, well, she's in bed, but just take them on up to her room. It's no problem. So, okay. So she was thrilled, and then we were able to wheel her out during the festival. She came out for the senior coffee hour. It's about a 15-minute walk, but she didn't mind at all, and she just had a big smile on her face the whole time and held one of the dogs on her lap the whole time in her wheelchair and just didn't want to leave when it was over, so it was pretty cool. So a 4th new aspect to my work is just going to be starting this week. We, in our region, have an English online seminary to train pastors throughout the region. So we have men from Pakistan, Bulgaria, Romania, Italy, all over, even some from Africa, taking classes and so that they can be pastors in their home countries. And the seminary decided this year they want to start a deaconess program. So I'll be teaching. They're taking theology with the men. But I'll be teaching a practical deaconess skills course once a month with them starting this coming Thursday. So that should be a good challenge. We only have two women. They both live in Turkey. One of them is Norwegian but has a degree in Persian language. The other one is Persian, and her English isn't super strong. So I have a feeling it's going to be kind of a mixed English-Persian deaconess class. It should be interesting. So keep me in your prayers for that, because I didn't volunteer, but I feel like it's something I'm called to do. So, but I had a little opportunity to talk to potential future deaconesses. I got to speak at the youth gathering last year. And when I wasn't speaking, I got to sit in the LCMS booth and answer questions about being a deaconess and being a missionary. And so they put up cards to kind of help the students prompt them, what could you ask a deaconess? And so one of the questions was, what do you love about being a deaconess? And so my response is being able to point people to Christ, who stretched out his arms on the cross, who welcomes us with open arms, who says, come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He's our rock, he's our redeemer, and he is our refuge. So. Any questions? Yeah.
Thank you for sharing all these tremendous stories. Truly, Christ is shining among the group. Translation, and the struggle or barrier, to use that word, you know, that's out there. Are there other such missions that are translating or use the Persian language too, that you can exchange and share? Would you translate, they can share, would you translate, or other entities, and I'll just throw out Wycliffe, for other entities that you can tap maybe some of the resources to help you with the translations that you can share in your interactions and worship, etc.
Right. So there are, we do have, like, the Bible is in Persian, so that was already done. So we use those translations, so we're not working on that. But as far as like Lutheran worship and liturgy, that's not out there at all. So we're pretty much doing the groundwork on that. There are other congregations in the Zelk that have Persian-speaking pastors, and so some of them are also working on that. There's a Finnish pastor serving in Hamburg, and I know he's done at least one or two hymns from Finnish into Persian, and so we got together very regularly before the pandemic, and we need to kind of get that going again, because then things have been kind of just crazy, as you all know, in the world. But we do share. We actually send an email out every week with the slides that I prepare for worship, with the sermon, so it has all the hymns and all the prayers and the sermon all in Persian, and we send that out. I think there's over close to 200 people on our list, and it goes throughout Germany, and it goes even to some other countries, to people who have at least one or two Persians or more in their congregation, so that they can share those with them, so that they can come to worship and sit there. There's one pastor in Finland that gets it, so every Sunday they're worshiping in Finnish, but they get a Persian sermon and prayers in their hand that they can kind of have something in their own language to be able to understand. And yeah.
Yeah.
Do you do any missionary work in places like Ethiopia or Somalia or Nigeria?
I think we do have some missionaries there, but me personally, no. But yeah, but the LCMS says it in general, I believe, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
More of a comment or an observation than a question, but I'm struck by the fact that you have to be so careful about sharing names, and that you're working with people who are literally putting themselves in risk of physical harm by associating with you. I just feel the need to pray for you and for them. And I love the fact that it's working, that you're reaching atheists and reaching atheists. And hopefully maybe some of the state church people who really don't understand.
Any other questions?
that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's always people coming in still. So it's getting harder for them to get into Germany than it used to be, I think, with we have a new government. But it, supposedly it's getting easier for the ones that are currently there to stay, which is, I think is why that one woman I said been there 8 years trying to get asylum and finally received that now. So even I'll be able to apply for permanent residency next year. Or like, basically now I can. When I get back, I'm going to start the process. So, yeah. Not to say I'm never going to come back. Just it'll make things a little easier. So, yeah.
In the outreach, when you're looking at who's coming in, how many are coming in from each of the countries, respectively, in your estimation? And then how many of those are starting straight out as Muslim? And then how many of those are those that came as Christians that escaped because of that?
That's a really good question. I don't have like hard data on that. Estimating from like just looking at our congregation and the people that I know, it's probably maybe 60% were believers in Iran or Afghanistan. Well, mostly not in Afghanistan, mostly Iran. There were some that came from house churches in Iran to us. Others like that, like the woman that you saw that got baptized in Berlin with her son, she was not a Christian. She was still Muslim there, but she had started reading the Bible on her own, and which is why she wanted to come and learn more. So, yeah. So, but we definitely also have Muslims who have been reached, and there it takes longer with them, but. The Iranians are especially open. They're kind of nominal Muslim, and so they're not real excited about what's happening in their country, and they blame the Islamic regime for that. And so they don't really want to be a part of Islam, but they believe that there's a God, and so they're open. And so they come looking, and then they usually come to us because they hear through word of mouth that we speak Persian and that we can help them. And so then they come, and then they start taking classes, and then they become Christian.
If you had to put a proportion on it, then house churches, those that find on their own, and then yeah. Muslim, what would the proportions be?
I would say 60-40, maybe. 60% house church, 40% Muslim. Yeah, yeah. But don't quote me on that, because I'm just guesstimating based on the people I know of in our congregation. So, yeah. Yeah. Good. Any other questions? Yeah. We try to have one. Try to make it Friday.
You just leave wherever you are.
So usually clean and meal prep.
Sometimes go play board games in Dresden. Or go for a hike in the woods with the dogs. Or yeah, try to. Yeah, do what I can. Yeah. So, I think that light means we don't have time to sing a song. You want to sing? Okay, all right. We can sing. Here we go. So this is one of the camp songs. I originally had tried to teach people at the churches I'm visiting a canon around in German and Persian and English. Didn't go over so well. It was a little more challenging than I expected. So I have switched songs to a very simple one that you should all know in English. This Bible verse was part of the intro this morning. And so it's an echo song. So see what you can do with it. We'll just sing through this. This is the kind of thing we would do at camp and sing in multiple languages. And the Persian kids loved it that we sang in their language and not only German. So, all right, here we go. Let's try this.
This is the day.
KH is like a sound. Okay, there's a long A with a hat and a short A that's without a hat, and the I's are like E sounds. So do the best you can. You'll get it.
Pray, Lord, that you continue to bless him and her work, that you would guide her.